101.7 FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Senator John Kennedy joining us. Senator, good morning. Merry Christmas to you and your family, sir.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Last night, President Trump addressed the nation, and he was espousing his successes and talking about the economy, and things are looking better. Do you agree with his assessment from last night?
I wouldn't trade America's economy for the economy of any other developed country in the world. China, no way. They're in a recession. You can say the same thing about France and Germany and the UK and Canada and many of the countries in South America. That doesn't mean things are perfect. Clearly, we have a slowing job market. Unemployment has ticked up. But we just got some inflation numbers this morning. The inflation is ticked down to about 2.7%. So I would say things are better, but they're not well.
My wife came home the other night from grocery shopping, and she said, you know, prices actually are coming down. And when you start, Senator, looking at midterms, that's going to be the crucial issue that voters are going to be thinking about is cost of living.
When moms and dads, well, this is just my opinion, of course, but when moms and dads lie down to sleep at night and can't, at the top of their list of reasons why they can't sleep is cost of living. I mean, that's just a fact. You can argue that it shouldn't be, but it is, and that's the way many Americans feel. The real issue is what do we do about it? The president, no matter who the president is, can't do everything. Congress is an equal branch of government, and in my judgment, the Senate, we're not doing enough about it. We could pass a bill next week in the Senate through what's called reconciliation without a single Democratic vote. We would welcome Democratic support, but we could pass a bill addressing cost of living without any Democrats.
What would it do? What would be the goal?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, we have a list of over 200 tax changes to our tax system that would stimulate the economy and increase wages. Number two, the American businesses spend between $2 and $3 trillion a year on regulation, government regulation. That's added to the cost of goods and services. If we cut regulation by 25%, the cost of goods and services would go down. We have a housing bill that's already, I'm on the banking committee. We passed out a housing bill unanimously, both Democrats and Republicans. It will lower the cost of housing. We should use reconciliation to address the cost of health care, particularly the Obamacare subsidies, which Obamacare, whether you subsidize it or not, is just clearly broken. Prices, subsidies or not, continue to go up between 8% and 10% a year. I mean, it's just, despite good intentions, Aaron, it's just broken. I mean, we were told Obamacare would make our insurance cheaper, and it's made it more expensive.
Let me go back to the prices for a minute real quick, because I'm looking at your Bureau of Labor Statistics out of the government, and it shows the index for food actually up 2.6% over the past year. The index for energy up 4.2% over the past 12 months. Is this data wrong?
No. There's some aspects of the economy where prices of goods and services are up, some where it is down. When you get an inflation number, that's an average of all goods. So you can always point to certain areas of the economy. Gas, for example, mm-hmm. the price of gas is down.
Yes.
But the truth is, that, I mean, that I think if you try to be fair-minded about this, a couple of years ago, we had 9% inflation. That inflation did not originate in a bat. It was man-made, and that man's name is President Joe Biden. We have battled to get it down, and we now have it down to 2.7%. But what that means is it doesn't mean that prices necessarily are falling in all respects. It means that right. prices were going up at an annualized rate of 9%. Now they're going up at an annualized rate of 2.7%, but they're still going up.
Don't you think the tariffs have had an impact on keeping prices higher than they really should be? Is that a concern of yours too?
The results are very mixed, and I don't think we know yet.
Okay.
I'm not a big tariff guy, but when the president imposed his tariffs, the press, of course, asked me how's it going to turn out, and I said, I honestly don't know. We've never had tariffs this high in 100 years, and I can't predict the future. I have to wait for it like everybody else. And the truth is that I was reading a piece last night, an analysis. The truth is that the tariffs have not contributed to inflation as much as a lot of the experts said, mainly because many of the businesses are not passing on the costs of the tariffs. They're eating them.
There's also a Speaker Johnson told us a week or two ago that next year, when the tax changes go into effect, that a lot of Americans will actually see, and he used the number $10,000 more in their checks. Is that an inflated number? Or are there some of us that are going to actually see that big of a beef up?
I don't know the amount. I do know Mike is right. The speaker's right that most of the provisions of the One Big Beautiful Bill will not take effect until January 1. And I do think that we'll see some dramatic relief. For example, beginning next year, businesses can write off, not depreciate over time, the cost of research and development or the cost of investments in new equipment and facilities. Those savings, not all of them, but many of them are going to result in higher wages. So I think if the one big beautiful bill does its job, and I think it will, you will see wages go up, and that of course helps people deal with prices.
You know, President Trump's Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, says, when you listen to him, of course, he's Trump's Secretary of the Treasury. I understand that. Sure. But he said 2026 is going to be phenomenal for the economy. It's when things start, like you just mentioned, when these things start taking effect, if people can hold on, it's going to be amazing.
I think it's going to be much better. I don't see the numbers that the Treasury Secretary sees. I don't have his data, so I'm not going to second guess him, say he's wrong or right in terms of percentages. But I do think that the effect of the One Big Beautiful Bill is going to be very, very positive, particularly on increased wages.
One more thing, I'm quoting you from the New York Post with regard to more reconciliation bills. Here's the reality, says Senator Kennedy. Most of my Democratic colleagues would rather bathe with their toasters than support any part of President Donald Trump's agenda.
Right.
Are they just not paying attention to what's going on in the world?
No, they just are political. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see an appetite among any of my Democratic colleagues in the Senate to try to help us. They want to run in the midterm elections on the issue of affordability, the cost of living. So if we want to do something about it, we're going to have to do it without Democratic help. And the only way to do it without Democratic help is to go through the reconciliation process. That's how we passed the one big, beautiful bill. Why we haven't been working on a second bill, I don't know. If I were king for a day, I'd bring a bill tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But rules, only the majority leader, one person, can decide to bring a bill to the floor of the U.S. Senate. And I have begged Senator Thune, who's my good friend, to please bring another reconciliation bill. Please. Pretty please.
And what's his response been?
He will not commit. He said all options are open. But John's been saying this since July when we passed the One Big Beautiful Bill. What we should have done was pass the One Big Beautiful Bill and then started on the second reconciliation bill. We should, in putting it together, we should say, Democrats, come join with us. But they're not going to join with us.
No.
And we don't need their votes. We only need 51 votes. We can do it with all Republican votes. And for the life of me, I don't understand why we're not. If you went to Chuck Schumer today and said, Chuck, even though you're in the minority, you have the right to pass any bill you want to within the restrictions of the Budget Control Act, and you don't need a single Democratic or Republican vote. Would you do that? He will jump on that like a hobo on a ham sandwich. Now, why aren't Republicans doing it?
Right.
Why aren't we doing it?
Yeah.
Instead of just talking about cost of living, whether you agree the cost of living is up or not, many Americans believe it.
Yeah.
And in some respects, it's accurate. So why aren't we trying to do something about it? We don't need Democratic votes. Why aren't we sitting on our ice-cold, lazy butts and just debating it?
Well, but even getting all Republicans together is sometimes difficult.
Well, sure, but it's not impossible.
Right.
We did it with the One Big Beautiful Bill. We did it with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. It can be done. Now, will we get every Republican vote? No. Senator Rand Paul's always a challenge, and there's some others. But we don't need every Republican vote. We only need 50 out of the 53, and then J.D. Vance can break the tie.
Well, I hope you get toasters for your Democratic Senate colleagues for Christmas. I hope you send them all a toaster this year. I think that's a good idea. I'll help fund it.
Or ham sandwiches.
Yeah. I think the most I'm going to send out to my Democratic colleagues is maybe a text. That's about it. That's going to be their
Christmas. Senator, thank you so much for your time. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and
Merry
we look
Christmas.
Forward to 2026.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You too, my friends. Thank you.
Senator John Kennedy, Mike and McCarty. Coming up in about 20 minutes, DEA Special Agent in Charge Steve Hofer going to talk about the new designation of fentanyl as a WMD. What does that mean? Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Play it after the break, right, Ruben? Because we're running up against the clock.
We went a little long.
Okay. We have my friend Scott Hughes is in the studio. Thank you for coming in.
It just wandered in.
Appreciate that. We have a lot of the speakers yesterday at the city council. A lot of them were against the data center. Several were for. There were several that were eloquent, but I found one that was an opponent who, you know, if you were an opponent, he made really good points. And I'm going to play that when we get back. And we'll hear from him.
There were like 50 speakers.
It was a lot. It really was. It was a lot. So we will play one of the opponents, some of his comments, not the full thing, about 2 minutes or so.
Do you feel he gives a pretty good summation of that argument?
He does. And it makes us remember there are things we need to think about and there are things we need to verify and watch while this project now moves forward. So that's coming up right here on Keel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, we are back. Long, long city council meeting about the data center. You watched it, Scott, I'm sure.
I tried. I watched part of it live, and then I had to, my children are home, so then I went to dinner with them, and I came back, and I tried to watch it on the video, which glitched a little near the end, as I told you. But it was 3.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. This was one of the opponents, and this is just almost all of his remarks. His name is Matt Alexander.
There was a time when Americans took pride in themselves and believed in the ability of the underdog to win against all logical odds. I would not, in your position, vote yes on this proposal. This is a vote for the continued growth of wealth for a group of madmen who have assured us that we cannot live without their technology. They are a group of people who threaten us and say that they will set up business somewhere else unless we surrender to their demands. They find great joy in the process of cities competing with each other in a race to see who will give away the most to a group who needs it the least. I do not believe that this is going to help the people of Shreveport. I don't think this is going to change anything in Rabel or Richland Parish, regardless of what the men like Mr. Busada say. Men whose inner circle, might I add, stand to financially gain more from this than all the people in Shreveport combined. I do not believe that this is going to positively affect the job market in Shreveport to the extent that has been advertised, because 50 or 100 or 200 jobs is like the equivalent of 2 or 3 more Olive Gardens being fully staffed, which is not nothing, but not, as Mayor Arsenault would describe, a home run. I do not believe this is going to stimulate local economic growth, temporary or permanent, to the effect that we have been convinced to believe. I do believe this is going to cause huge problems with your water and sewer sector. I do believe that this is going to cause more instability with the grid. I do believe that when the grid goes down, people that live near this facility will have to shout at each other in their own houses just to be able to speak. I do believe that this facility will cause utility rates to increase, whether it be SWEPCO passing the cost of new construction onto its customers or the city raising rates, not to pay for increases to workers and needed improvements in various neighborhoods, but for infrastructure needed to accommodate this proposed monstrosity. I also believe this technology in itself is not here for good, but rather for profit, for people who cannot get enough of it. But the one thing I really believe in, and that I am stupid enough and naive to believe in, is that one person can actually make a difference, and that enough people naive enough to believe this can form a society where they can see a future for themselves and their children. Our elected officials should feel this way, too. Please vote no on this proposal.
All right, more on the data center throughout the morning. The mayor's joining us after 7 o'clock. Brandon Sneed with the Water and Sewer Department is also joining us. Next, though, we've got DEA Special Agent Stephen Hoffer from yesterday, if you missed it, on fentanyl now being classified as a WMD. He will explain what that means and how the feds are now really getting tough. That is next, right here on Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline this morning, Special Agent in Charge, DEA, Steve Hofer, joining us. Name right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
Thank Hofer. You. Yes, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. President Trump signing an executive order designating fentanyl as a WMD. Why is this important?
Yeah, this is so important and such a significant step forward in the fight against the deadly drug of all synthetic opioids, specifically fentanyl, because as promised, this administration is moving forward the full weight of the U.S. government, because fentanyl, as we know, has killed hundreds of thousands of Americans over the last few years. And so fentanyl is clearly more of a chemical threat than it is a traditional drug threat.
What communities is it hurting the most? I know you deal with it very closely. What communities is it harming the most?
It is in absolutely every community across America. There's nowhere that fentanyl has not found its way and just caused havoc and been significantly impactful to every community in America, every neighborhood. It is the number one drug threat all across America.
Where is it coming from? Can you pinpoint that?
We know that a large majority of fentanyl comes and is manufactured and is smuggled into the United States. And the people that are primarily responsible for that is there are two Mexican cartels, the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco New Generation, or better known as CJNG cartel. And if I may add to that, where it comes from, and I think the one important, very significant point to this is, unlike drugs of days of old, where there had to be, we waited for a growing season, for example, to produce cocaine or heroin or even marijuana, these synthetic drugs like fentanyl, you can produce as much as you can get the precursor chemicals for, and then it is a matter of just getting there, mixing it together, producing the finished product, and then smuggling it into the United States.
DEA Special Agent in Charge Steve Hofer, this is important because this helps the administration and helps you as a DEA in the DEA in this battle against these cartels. This allows them to militarize this battle.
Absolutely. You know, I think one important point to look at is when we talk about the cartels, we're talking about maybe not just the cartel bosses that are sitting in Mexico. We're talking about any kind of operative or associative, anybody that's working with the cartels. And they may not necessarily even have met anybody that is a high-ranking cartel member. But
like those running drug boats across the...
Could potentially be that way. But people have to recognize that fentanyl comes from somewhere. And I'm telling you, it comes from those cartels that are in Mexico. So this new executive order, people need to recognize if they are distributing fentanyl in any manner or helping in any manner, that the sentencing could be life-changing for them. Because no longer are we looking at drug trafficking charges. We're looking at a national security threat.
Also, it also comes with this executive order comes with greater federal resources, I'm told. Can you explain what that will entail?
Yes. Like any kind of national public threat, this executive order now enhances DEA's capability to tap into national intelligence resources and to partner even closer with Department of War to continue to make impactful investigations and be a part of the solution. We need to get to a point where fentanyl, we have a free America from fentanyl.
Steve Hofer, how will this help the DEA in your battle against fentanyl and other these dangerous opioids?
Well, I think there's a couple of fronts. First is what was just mentioned is the fact that more and more resources are now open to DEA, in that we shift from traditional drug investigations to now national security investigations or operations that we're going to be a part of. But not only that, as we all know, this kind of attention and ultimately the sentencing and prosecution that comes along with anybody that's involved with the distribution of or smuggling of fentanyl can be very impactful.
You've had some success stories already. Describe what's been happening. I believe it's St. Tammany Parish, where you've had really great progress in curbing fentanyl deaths. Tell us what's going on there.
Yes. Thank you. In the last couple of years, we've had some real great success in St. Tammany Parish with our approach. We call it the trifecta. It's a three-pronged approach where primarily is our focus on destroying the cartels, ridding the local area of the cartel presence. And then two is making sure that all of our partners, state, local, and other federal partners that we have, that this is where our primary focus is, and using all of our resources together to target specific fentanyl distributors. And then third, which really very important, is the prosecution level at both the state and the federal level, that distributors of fentanyl that result in an overdose death, they're being treated as murderers. And the homicide charges that come along with this, that has been extremely impactful, to the point where we have seen the last 2 years a 70% fatal overdoses in St. Tammany Parish.
I want to ask you, see if we can connect the dots with the Catahoula Crunch that's going on in the southeast Louisiana area. Are there some of those efforts that are being done Are we realizing that some of these folks that were captured in the New Orleans area may be related to the fentanyl drug trade? Is that something you're hoping? And I know y'all coordinate through your efforts too, right?
Yes, I mean we're part of that effort, that operation. It is not new that we partner with other federal agencies, specifically with Homeland Security and the Border Patrol partners. But with their enhanced efforts, yes, we're taking advantage of the opportunity of having additional resources in the area, and using our tools and our resources to facilitate additional fentanyl investigations. It is an additional intelligence for us to open new cases, but it also does lead to immediate arrests and contributing to removing fentanyl from the area.
One more thing before we let you go. I know you're busy. For folks who don't know, and I'm maybe in that list too, describe what fentanyl is and what it does to people.
So that's a really good question. And I think that, if I may, I'll talk a little bit about this, that one of the major points that I know DEA and many of the other federal agencies across the whole United States are concerned with is educating Americans of exactly what it is that we're dealing with. And I think one misconception that we'd like to get through is that there are, in our minds, there are two different kinds of fentanyl. There is the medical grade fentanyl, which can be used for a lot of good by doctors and physicians, and it can be used as a wonderful drug when used correctly. But what we're talking about is illicit fentanyl, and that is someone who's not a doctor, who doesn't know what they're doing, that gets their hands on all of the precursor chemicals, and they go into a garage or a warehouse or just out in the jungle somewhere down in Mexico, and they get their barrels of these chemicals together, mix it up, and no one's regulating it as you would with regular fentanyl, but no one's regulating it. Those come into the form of either powder or pills, or it's mixed with other illicit drugs and makes its way into the United States. And then that's how it's killing hundreds of thousands of Americans, is because it's not regulated. It's not the same kind of fentanyl that person would get care for in the hospital.
And this legislation specifically mentions illicit fentanyl.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, that's correct. Correct. Because it is a chemical weapon.
We can't thank you enough for your help. Great, great story. I hope we'll be in touch again soon.
Yes, thank you.
You bet.
Steve, thank you so much. Merry Christmas, and thank you for your work, sir. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.com.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, we only have about a minute and a half here, Scott Hughes. Put your real estate hat on. The data center in West Shreveport. What happens with property values?
They skyrocket.
All around it?
I'll give you I was talking to somebody over in the Monroe area, over in Richland Parish, 2 years before the project was known. Land was selling around the data center area for about $5,000 an acre. A year before, when some people knew it was coming, when the stakes were out, the rumor was there, land jumps to $10,000 or $15,000 an acre.
Whoa.
Today, land is $100,000 an acre.
Wow. So all the land along Greenwood Road.
All the land along Greenwood Road is probably going to see an increase. I'm not saying it's going to see that increase in value, but you're going to see an increase in value. Historically, when you build a data center or something similar to this, it increases land value tremendously. That's one reason why they want the pilot tax, the payment in lieu of tax. Mm-hmm. They're not getting out of taxes. They just want to set the tax payment because they know their building is going to appreciate the value of everything around it. So they would effectively be punished for their own development.
Ah, okay.
And so, but then what happens is it's kind of like building a Walmart. Everybody wants to be next to it. So people come in and they'll pay anything to be able to be next to it.
Absolutely. Brandon Sneed, Water and Sewer Director, coming up after 7. Mayor Tom Arsenault coming up after 7:30. What now with the data center? Those are the big questions right here on Keel. And on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker hotline, we've got Shreveport Water and Sewer Director Brandon Sneed. Scott Hughes is in for Mike Martindale, Brandon, so he may be asking you a couple of tough questions, too. The city council voted unanimously yesterday to move forward with a special exception use for the data center. You are the man on the hot seat with regard to the water and sewer. What now for your department? What are your marching orders now with regard to the use of water for a data center and the wastewater?
Well, right now, there's really not much to do right now. There's a lot of other things that have to happen before we ever get involved. And until they start building and needing our infrastructure, that we're kind of in the stand, we're in a holding pattern right now.
How soon do you think that we will actually start seeing work done? What are you being told to prepare for?
I've been told in a couple of years we'll start seeing a lot of activity, probably a lot before then, but before they'll actually start needing a lot of our water, according to the documents that you've seen. Until then, until they're fully phased out, they're not going to pull that much water. And I think there's been a lot of conversations regarding, the water agreement, seeing that max number of 7.5. That's a max number. What we will more than likely see will probably be more something like 2.5 million to 3 million on an average daily use.
And you're talking about 2.5 million gallons of water a day for the data center. But we've authorized up to 7.5 million gallons a day, and you're saying they won't need that much.
That's not going to be a daily use. But a lot of that is for fire suppression, their sprinkler systems, things of that nature. A daily use is just going to be more on that lower end, which is still a great revenue boost, but it's not going to be that daily pool of 7.5 million. If they do, that's fine. We can handle that. A lot of the infrastructure upgrades that they've committed to building for us will provide for all of that, not only for them, but also for the West Shreveport pressure zone and the city.
And Brandon, Scott Hughes, good morning. As I watched the debate, there seemed to be a lot of difference in citizens. They would say the word water, but what came apparent to me is we were talking about three parts of water. We're talking about capacity, we're talking about distribution, and we're talking about quality. And I may be naive, but this seems to only deal with capacity. It doesn't seem like it's going to affect distribution or quality a whole lot. And so can you address that? How would this deal address? I think you were talking about capacity. Is it going to hurt us on distribution and quality, or is it going to help us in that area?
No, actually, it's actually going to be opposite. It's going to help the area for capacity. Let me just give you a figure. You know, Cross Lake holds about 23 to 24 billion gallons of water.
Billion with a B. 9, billion.
000 billion. It's over 9,000 plus acres of land. You know, we're fed from all the rain from tributaries from East Texas, all the runoff. So we have the capacity. The plant was built for about 225,000 population. We don't have that anymore. You know, we've dwindled. So we have plenty of water to sell. So with the improvements they want to do in that area, it's going to benefit that area. It's going to benefit with the looping of some water lines, newer pumps, bigger pumps at the 77 Pines booster station, also another elevated ground storage tank.
Are they paying for all of that? They're paying for all the infrastructure that you just mentioned.
Absolutely. The city of Shreveport will not bear the cost. Water and sewer will not bear the cost for any of those upgrades I just mentioned.
And a water tower is part of the plan?
That is part of the plan.
Okay, let's talk about the revenue boost, because you say if they use 2.5 million gallons a day, what does that translate into for what we sell? How much money the city's going to get for that?
At 2.5 million gallons per day use, it'll equate to approximately $3 million per year from one user. One.
Okay, and if they go over that, it goes up, and that's we need new users, because you can then spend that money on other improvements that you're under that consent decree for in other parts of town, right?
Right. And not only the consent decree, but in our water system. And that's the important part. And that, you know, in our negotiations with the consent decree is, you know, we've been very clear with them about we have to also invest in our water infrastructure. We cannot neglect that. We can't spend every dime on sewer. You know, we have to have a balance. So this extra revenue will absolutely be a benefit to the entire city, because we can put that into more capital projects.
This is not your first rodeo with water and sewer. We have had, and mine either, in my how many years I've been doing this, we have had summers in August around this community where we're told, hey, maybe not water your yards this week. We're in a drought. Are there concerns about that with regard to such a heavy user?
No. Matter of fact, I've done a lot of research and pulling data with my institutional knowledge, but also my staff. You know, looking back at that, I looked back and I found that we didn't do a mandate. We just asked people if they would maybe not water their lawns as much in 2013.
That's the last time
we did that.
Okay.
Last time we did that. And let me, I'll tell you about pumpage. Right now, average daily pumpage, right now, currently today, we are pumping out of the plant about 35 million gallons per day. Remember, the plant's rated for 78 million gallons per day. Year from December to December this year, our average pumping for the entire year was approximately 43 million gallons per day.
Could such a heavy user impact water pressure? I mean, where I'm sitting now is, you know, as the crow flies, you know, a few football fields away from this location. Could that impact water pressure in West Shreveport at all?
No. West Shreveport, if you remember, a lot of the infrastructure built there was built for big industry like GM. When GM left us, you know, there was not a lot of usage in that area. So we have infrastructure there. The West Shreveport pressure zone, the way it's designed, it's a good location for a user such as that, whether it be the data center or another user like that. It's going to be a easy feat for us to do, especially if they go into the higher end and they build out this extra infrastructure. It's a win for us as far as our revenue, but also I think it's going to benefit the citizens in the surrounding areas with newer infrastructure and better equipment.
And Brandon, you mentioned we've had large industry here before, AT&T, General Motors, other large users. I think y'all sell water to Barksdale. What kind of users were those? And then what happens to the wastewater coming out of this? 7 million goes in, 2 million goes in. What comes out?
Okay, good question. When GM was here at the height of their usage, they were using about 2.5 million gallons per day. And so what'll happen with this company, a lot of the water they're going to take in, it's going to be recycled because of the cooling towers. And so about 35% of that will come back, and that'll be sewer, and it's going to be your basic sewer. It's not any more different than a residential or regular commercial. They're going to be charged industrial rates just like everybody else would be. And so it's about 35% of what goes in, we will get back as sewer.
One more question before we let you go. And sure. I know you'll be honest because you are a very upstanding young man. Are there some concerns that Brandon Snead, Shreveport's water and sewer director, has about this project? Is there anything that hey, we got to address this. We need to take care of this. This could become an issue.
No, ma'am. You know, we've been studying this. I mean, we didn't just start on this last week. As you know, we've been our water model, our water sewer model. We've been studying this. Our experts, our engineers, the people we pay to study it, along with our institutional knowledge. And any of that was addressed then. And that's what we do. We look at this. We model it. We see, can this site support this? Can we support this? What upgrades would we need to do or would they need to do in order for this to come to fruition? So any of those concerns would have already been answered. So currently now, I do not have any.
And go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, Brandon, because I heard some good points. Would it be safe to assume that the company that did did their research, they feel safe that you can provide this? They wouldn't be investing $2 billion if they had a concern that you couldn't provide water over a long period of time. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a partnership when somebody that large or anybody, any business opens here. They want to know that they can be provided for. And in the water service agreement, there are things spelled out in that contract. You know, if act of God or a drought happens that's beyond us, well, then that is what it is. They wouldn't come here if they didn't feel we could provide the utilities that they need.
Gotcha. Brandon Snead, Shreveport Water and Sewer Director. Thanks for your time, sir.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank
Mayor
you,
Tom Arsenault is going to join us in about 20 minutes. We will talk to him about what is next for the data center for Shreveport. That's coming up right here on Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back. Scott Hughes in for Mike Martindale. Her heard a lot of people during the meeting yesterday before the city council. A lot of people spoke. And we have heard a lot of people say that, oh, these NDAs and some people are on the take and all this sort of stuff. Is that complete hogwash in your view?
Well, I don't want to say it's complete hogwash because I believe they're looking at people that might be like lawyers, engineers. There are people who make money on a deal. So if that is the angle that these people were going, then there are people that make money in a deal. You want money invested. But I didn't take it that way. I took it that these people were accusing elected officials and others of bribes. They were effectively saying that these people were paid for their vote. And I do think that's ridiculous. I think that's uneducated people on how these deals work. And as someone who's been in the room, as the song from Hamilton goes, if you've never sat in the room or been in part of a deal like this, I don't think you even understand what the deal's even about.
For them to make accusations against the city council members.
You better have canceled checks, in my opinion.
Yeah, show me some proof. But before you get up and say that at a public body like that, give me some evidence. Let me see something that you can show me, because then the FBI's coming. You know, then the FBI will be on
it. And for the record, I'm not talking about a campaign contribution.
No.
Any citizen, if you think a campaign contribution should have done it, then 900 people should have given money to the mayor. And the mayor wouldn't have done it if you believe that's how it works.
Right, exactly.
And so I think there's some people that got, they're very upset. There's passion, and I get that. But at the end of the day, there was one speaker that I thought gave a great inside baseball talk for those that don't understand it. Is one of the reasons you do an NDA is because if we sit there last night and we talk about the financial deal, we talk about the players. The biggest winner last night would have been Bossier City. Mayor Tommy Chandler would have been taking notes and would have picked up the phone right after the meeting and called the vendor and said, we'll beat Shreveport's deal.
Yeah.
And you say, you're crazy, Scott. No, the guy told the story about some of the GM stuff that went to Texas because they were required back then to let us know and the deals were public and Longview just came over here and stole some of these factories.
Right, out from under us.
I used the word stole because those were closed deals, ready to go. And then at the last second, Texas swooped in and said, oh, here's how much that Louisiana is going to give you. We'll beat all that.
Yeah. It's like shopping for a car.
And
if everybody knows what you're paying.
10 miles across the Texas line, and
absolutely,
we lost all that opportunity. And that's what this is about. It's about protecting the investment. I do think there needs to be a lot of accountability. And I think that, and I'll be one of the ones to ask, I think when these are signed and we can see the documents, when we can see that a pilot tax, payment in lieu of taxes, is not a tax exemption. It's an agreement up front how much we're going to pay in taxes.
Yes.
That's the number I want to see. And I've been told by some, and I'm not on the NDA list. I wasn't in these rooms. I've been in these rooms before doing many of my jobs. But when we see the numbers, that's when we're going to know if our representatives sold us out, as some want to claim, or did our elected officials cut some good deals for Shreveport, good deals for the community to try to bring things here. Because at the end of the day, I saw two big arguments. I saw an argument, are you for or against AI?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are against AI, and they took the opportunity. And then I saw people that said, this is going to be built. Why shouldn't it be built here?
Right.
And that's the deal I support.
Absolutely. Mayor Tom Arsenault coming up in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk to him about what now with the data center. Where do we go from here now that it's been approved by the Shreveport City Council on a unanimous vote? That's coming up right here on Keel.
The show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back. Scott Hughes in for Mike Martindale, and we're going to cut this segment short because we have the mayor joining us in just a couple of minutes.
He may have some thoughts.
Yeah, he might have some thoughts. He gave a statement yesterday, which I thought was pretty direct and pretty important, how this is a big deal for our community. So we need to talk to him about what happens next, I guess. That's the next step, huh?
Yeah, I think his comments will be very interesting. I don't know how much more he can share now. As I said earlier, I think now we'll sit back and want to see the official documents, who this is. But in some ways, let's be honest, this will now be hung on the mayor as a legacy. And I don't think it's fair. And we think it's a home run. But I think the mayor has worked very hard to bring this along with a lot of other people.
Absolutely. The mayor joins us next right here on Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, we are joined, thankfully, this morning by Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. I appreciate you being available to us today. This is a big day for our city. The city council voted unanimously 7-0 to approve the special exception use for a data center for West Shreveport. First, your reaction. I assume you thought this was going to go well, and it did. What were your thoughts when you heard about when you saw the vote?
Well, I was very pleased with the vote. It really demonstrates the kinds of things that we can do to move the city forward when all of us are pulling in the same direction. And I think this was a very controversial thing that we were able to get together on with the unanimous vote of the council, support of the administration, support of a lot of the business community, and support of a lot of citizens. I mean, there were more people that spoke in favor than spoke opposed yesterday. And that just tells you that there is a feeling that we're ready to move Shreveport forward.
What happens now, Mayor?
Well, I think now they have the developer has secured the water supply, has secured all of the zoning rights and that they have to do. So they'll have to make a final decision and followed by an announcement. And I really don't know exactly when that will happen, but I think it will happen quickly.
So you're saying it's not quite a done deal yet?
Correct.
Are they looking at other communities too? Is that a concern for you?
No, I don't think so. No, I think they just need to put everything in place for here. So I feel very confident that this will occur. But there's still some steps in the process. All of them are basically away from city government. So they're developer kind of steps that they need to take to wrap it up.
What kind of time frame are you anticipating that we will know that this is where they're coming, that it is going to be a done deal for us?
Well, I'm not sure. There's some other pieces of the puzzle that are out there, and I think they're waiting to get some of those pieces in place. I would anticipate, I would certainly hope within the next 6 months, and it may be much earlier than that.
Tom, good morning. This is Scott Hughes.
Hi, Scott.
Congratulations on you, the council, on getting this through. One quick question, just as we're in the first part of this. Somebody raised a question last night about the physical application. It wasn't in order. Are you concerned that there might be any appeals of this decision? Legally, are we moving on, or does anybody have an appeal right at this point?
Well, somebody would have, yeah, there's always an appeal right of the decision of the council. Those are extremely hard to win. So I'm not worried about the ultimate result there. There were a couple of speakers that kind of alluded to things that they might raise, but I don't believe that there's anything there that would give rise to a successful claim.
When will we know, Mayor Arsenault, who this is, what the specifics of the deal are? When will we know that? When will the public be able to be privy to that?
Well, you may not ever know all of the details, but I think you will know who the operator will be and who the developer is. This is a private company and it's a private venture. So usually the public doesn't know and doesn't have a right to know all of those details. We're not Big Brother.
Would some of the tax information be public, Tom? That was some of the things people really questioned. I don't think many people might not understand a pilot tax and some of the agreements that were made in lieu of taxes. I think that was one of the big questions. Will those become public?
The pilot has been approved. It is public.
Okay.
It's been public for several weeks. The water agreement is public. It was approved last night. So those things are already public, exactly what is going to happen now. Again, the electrical arrangements, the only thing that I know is that whatever electrical facilities are necessary, including power plants, will have to be built at the expense of the developer and can't be put into the rate base for other consumers.
So, and so that part of it may stay unknown, but that's their cost.
It may, but now the only way that it would is if for some reason they included that they had to get rates approved for them because the
the Public Service Commission determines those rates. But my appreciation is they're going to pay whatever the industrial rates are for electricity.
Let's back up just a minute when you say we may not know. We're going to know the overall company. Like in Monroe, it's Meta. We knew when Amazon was coming. I mean, we're going to know the big company name.
They'll make an announcement. They'll make an announcement about it.
Okay. And do you have it on your timeline? Like, hey, I'd like to know. I'd like to have more info by the first quarter or anything like that for you yet?
Basically our agent for these kinds of transactions is the North Louisiana Economic Partnership. And so I stay in touch with Justin Dixon on a very frequent basis to keep posted. And I believe they want to move forward quickly. So I think you'll see something very quickly, but I don't have a particular timeline.
What is your message to the residents in West Shreveport who expressed a lot of concerns? They're very worried. Many of them are retired or elderly, and they're very worried what this will do to their neighborhood. What do you say to them this morning, Mayor Arsenault?
Well, I think some of their concerns were fomented by some people who are trying to scare them. Unfortunately, that sometimes works. And so there were people that were legitimately concerned. I think certainly once it's constructed, they're hardly going to know it's there. So I feel very good about long-term. This is not something where there will be some construction. That'll be daytime activity. So I really believe that they will have some inconvenience. But ultimately, I think that it will enhance their property values long-term.
Tom, moving forward, construction, and I have seen some of these sites, construction is massive. There's just no other way around talking about the construction. What can the city do, or how are y'all planning for the construction phase? Because it is an industrial park on along Greenwood Road in a part of town that's got some, it does have some narrow access going in and out. What can the city do to help during that process? Because that's what we're going to see next at some point is construction, right? Site preparation and construction.
Right. They'll start having permits that when they get ready to get their permits, there'll be meetings about how best to facilitate that. And I feel confident that they will do what they can to make that as convenient as possible for people who are other than the developer.
How do you anticipate, Mayor Arsenault, this project will, in the long-term scheme of things, how will it change the face of West Shreveport? What will West Shreveport look like in 5, 10, 20 years from now?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but I would think that in the short run, I think you're going to see food service, restaurants, perhaps some hotels or expansions of hotels. There's going to be because some of the construction workers will come in from out of state, and they will be having to be lodged somewhere. I've heard stories, and it's just stories about people going to hoteliers and saying, "Look, we want all your rooms for 5 years."
Wow!
This is a really, really big deal. In long-term, big jobs, not as big as, say, a General Motors, but in terms of capital investment, absolutely as big as General Motors. And I anticipate a significant boom in West Shreveport as a result of this.
Tom, and you know I run the Realtor Association in my day-to-day life. We saw that over in some of these other areas where the contractors actually came in, as you alluded, and actually bought the hotels. They actually bought them, renovated them, and they have to house people for many years, the amount of construction workers coming in. They almost become semi-permanent citizens. What we've also seen in those locations, Tom, is that when you build the big facility, it's like in the old days, you'd build a Walmart, and then people wanted to buy the out parcels, if people understand that development analogy. And we've seen that happen with these facilities. Do you and the city or NLEP and others, do you feel there's going to be other conversations for other tenants in this industrial park?
Well, there could very well be, and there's other industrial property in the vicinity. I do think you'll have it certainly will help SLB. And I think I think you're likely to have other suppliers that are going to locate here
just to save shipping costs and that kind of thing. So I think there'll be a number of indirect jobs that are created for to support this facility.
Brandon Snead told us last half hour that the sale of the water alone is $3 million a year. Do you have a number in mind for the remainder of the taxes that will be paid?
I have seen an estimate of the 1% pilot. And remember, that is a give back. The state exempted them from sales tax. So that wasn't money we were going to get anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1%, and they believe in the next 3 years, will produce $20 million over 3 years. Now, that's all the local sales tax entities. So that parish, sheriff, school board, if they, I don't remember if they have a sales tax or not, and the city sales tax. But ours is a good hunk of that. And then there will also be millions of dollars in property taxes.
So in general, Tom, that would be the 1% versus maybe a 4.5 where the combined Caddo City Shreveport tax may be now. That's the pilot.
Yes, but we weren't going to get that money without a pilot.
Because the state, not anything the locals did.
That's exactly right.
One last thing before we let you go. I know you probably want to have a message for residents who did speak out. I mean, that's our government process, and it was kind of actually great to see people on both sides. Do you have a message to those folks this morning?
Well, I'm delighted that they exercised their constitutional rights to speak out. That's what we're here for. And I think I took their concerns to heart. A lot of times what I try and do in making decisions is to listen carefully to what their concerns are and make sure that those concerns are met. That had to do with noise, with water rates, and with electrical rates and water capacity. And I delved into those deeply and concluded that they were legitimate concerns, but they were satisfied.
Mayor Tom Arsenault, thank you for your time. We sure hope you and your family has a Merry Christmas.
Y'all have a great Christmas, too.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, Scott Hughes, we've had an hour of talking about the data center. What are we missing? Are we missing anything?
I don't think we're missing anything. I think my big takeaway at 30,000 feet, which I like to do as an analyst sometimes, is there were a lot of different issues in the room last night.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of the issues had much to do with the data center, the company coming, and the project. I think a lot of issues had to do with trust. I think there's a part of this community that doesn't trust government. There's a part of this community that is taking some other national issues and reflecting them back into this.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw a we don't need billionaires message. I think we saw an anti-AI, and I get that. I am not a huge AI person. I want to say that up front.
Right.
AI scares me. You and I have talked before.
Sure.
And Ruben, of course, knows the quote of, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that.
Yeah.
The famous movie quote where the computer kills the astronaut. AI has always terrified me. I think it may not be as good as everyone thinks that it is. But that's a separate question of, is this data center going to be built? And I think that's the question the city council, the mayor, the economic development people are asking. There is a $2 billion data center going to be built. And there mm-hmm. are a lot of people that didn't want it built, A, in our community,
sure.
B, at all. And I think what got lost in the shuffle is that there was a small minority that didn't want it built at that location because they live there.
Right.
And that's the
right.
ones I really was trying to listen to.
Yes.
I think the mayor was talking, and I try to be fair, but I think the questions were largely answered in what this is going to do for the impact of it being where it's going to be and the people that live contiguous to it.
Do you think when the dust settles and this place is built, that the residents there on Greenwood Road will feel a little better? Because like the mayor says, some of their fears were stoked by other people. Do you think they'll feel a little better about what they actually got? I know the construction phase is going to be rough.
I was going to say, the problem I think we're going to experience, the neighbors are not wrong, because they're about to go through a unique experience that most of us are not. And I think if we could wave a magic wand and we could be 3 years down the road and the facility was open, mm-hmm. and it looked like the facility in Manassas or in these other places,
sure.
I think the neighbors would be very happy. I think at that point, I've driven through Manassas. I told you this when you called me on the air. My mm-hmm. daughter lives in Virginia. I regularly drive through Manassas, Virginia. It's between Charlottesville and Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the 40 data centers right there off the interstate. And it's a nice community. And so if we could wave the wand and get to the end product, I think everyone would be happy. They're quiet. They provide jobs. The neighborhoods seem to be thriving next to them. That's good. But these are going to have to live through an unbelievable construction phase that unfortunately might drive many from the neighborhood.
More on the data center coming up right here on Keel. We have spent so much time talking about the data center this morning that we haven't really talked about something that's impacting almost every military personnel.
Merry Christmas, warriors.
They're getting a check from the federal government, military folks. Tell me about this.
The other night, if you watched the president speak, in the middle of his speech, he talked about giving a warrior check for $1,776, mm-hmm. in honor of the 250th anniversary of the country, which is 2026.
Okay. And does it go to every member of the military?
He stated that 1.4 million members of the military will get the check. And it raised a lot of eyebrows because, A, that's kind of a bonus, and there's some government issues with that and everything. And so I did some research into it, and I think I texted you yesterday. Mm-hmm. This is real. Our Barksdale friends and others will get this check.
And I'm told by one military mom that it's already hit the bank. I mean, her son's already gotten his check, and it's in the account.
Correct. Being the geek I am, I'm like, well, Congress didn't approve that. How's that going to happen? What's the mechanics of it? So I dove into it. Actually, Congress did approve this. They just don't know they did.
Ah.
Very quietly last week, one of the 12 funding bills was finally approved. We shut government down because there were 9 bills still to go. Well, one of those 9 got through. It was the Department of Defense bill.
Okay.
Okay. In the Department of Defense bill, which is like $1 trillion, buried deep in there was a new line item for $2.2 billion for additional housing allowance. That's what Congress approved.
Okay.
2.2 additional housing allowance. So what the president has done is basically authorize Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, to take that money, 2.2, and issue it as a one-time stipend.
Okay.
Congress intended it to be $150 a month for 12 months. You do the math, mm-hmm. okay? And that would be about the same amount. Well, Trump decided to just issue it as a one-time warrior bonus now. So the money is there for those. And I'm a cynic. You know that I check all this stuff
sure.
out. And so the money is there. It was congressionally approved. But and like your sons will each get this, but they will not get it the way it was intended. $150 for their housing allowance, which is an acknowledgement of inflation. That's actually why Congress put it in. Military personnel have higher housing costs wherever they're assigned to live. So we're trying to give them some money for that, but they will get this one-time bonus check of $1,776.
And that is supposed to cover their housing for the full year.
It's a yearly housing supplement.
So they're going to get it every year.
Well, it's in the budget, so they have to approve the budget every year. So it's okay. in there for 26. And according to my research for my Barksdale friends and others, I do think it was only authorized for 06 and below. So I do think okay. like a certain rank and above, they're not going to get this housing allowance.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's most of the military ranks 06 and below.
Is it enough to put your real estate hat on now? Is $150 a month more for housing costs enough to cover the increase in housing prices in the country?
In general, no. I think housing prices, I like to quote, I know my numbers here in Shreveport-Bossier, and I use them a lot. But really, before COVID, the average 3-2 house in this market was about $180,000. Today, it's $250,000.
Whoa.
And then, of course, rent goes up scaled on that. Because
sure.
So rent's way up as well. We are starting to see we say cooling of the rates, which means they're stabilizing. They're not going down.
Okay.
We're not going to see a lot of dropping in rate. If we do, that can become a little alarming, although we have a lot of equity built up. But rents are starting to creep down a little bit because rents are a little more competitive. But yes, $1,700 a year, $110 a month, is going to help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the costs are definitely up more. more than that.
Okay. When we come back, I want you to keep that real estate hat on, and I want to talk about what we could envision for West Shreveport real estate-wise and development-wise as a result of the data center. Can we do that?
I'd certainly like to own land out there right now.
Boy, no kidding. We will talk with Scott about that when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with my buddy Scott Hughes. What are you doing?
I've got my opossum we're out there hat on, which is really a beer koozie.
Okay, you look like a Shriner, and your hat shrunk like Beetlejuice.
I'm trying to promote Ruben's band. I know they have a big Christmas show probably coming up.
No, they did it already.
We did it already. We collected a bunch of toys and money for Operation Santa Claus.
Yes.
It was a big hit. Perfect. I missed the Christmas show again for the 59th year in a row.
I have to thank you, by the way. I was talking to some friends yesterday because you helped donate to my shavenness to the Cue Ball Fund.
You called me out, and I live next to the Brookshire Gucci, so I had to go.
I know, and we appreciate you donating.
Lots of people donated.
Oh, my gosh. I don't have the full tally. I'm waiting to get the final tally, but we had the 20 grand by Wednesday. 3 days, we raised over $20,000.
What's that hair still doing on your head?
Well, I'm going to shave it on January. What's the Monday after the new year? January 4th, 5th, whatever it is. That's the scheduled day to shave it, because I have some real important things for Christmas that I'm doing.
Cue Ball Monday?
Cue Ball Monday. I like that.
Grace
yeah.
Ann doing it?
They are. They're going to come in. We're going to actually do it on the air. We'll figure out a way that maybe we can stream it. I don't know. I don't think Grace Ann's going to touch it because she gets too nervous. So I think she'll bring one of her folks with her to do the.
Well, I did give. I heard you that morning. I heard you the previous morning. So I just want to say thank you for doing it.
Well,
it was very impressive. And I know there were two large givers. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But there were, I had to wait in line to give that morning at Brookshire's. There were people, Chica, I actually gave my money to Chica. Chica was out in the cold. So mm-hmm. God bless her. We make fun of Chica, but she goes and does those remotes and helps get that money in there. And that was a good cause.
Absolutely. Want to switch gears with you and get your real estate hat back on. And it's not the opossum hat, by the way. It's a different hat. Development-wise, with regard to a data center, does a Target come? Do a lot of restaurants come? New housing developments come? What would you put in your top three things that will be coming to West Shreveport because a data center is coming?
Well, I think you're going to see different phases based on what has taken place in other communities. The immediate phase is going to be the construction phase. And I think that can be a little difficult. And, you know, we were talking a second ago about that. But the construction phase is the largest employment phase, because this is going to be like an ant mine. There's going to be maybe 1,000 workers. There's going to be a lot of people here for a couple of years. This is not like building a Target, to be honest.
Right.
This is building a multi-million square foot facility. There are going to be thousands of workers. So you're going to see people here eating three meals a day, because a lot of them don't live here. You're going to see people moving in. They're going to buy hotels. In other communities, they have bought hotels just to house their workforce for 2 or 3 years. So, yes, and they all make good money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's money in the community. And so when the mayor talks about sales tax and things, he's not talking about that money, the money that the people spend for the next 2 or 3 years while they're building a facility. So that will create new restaurants. That will create opportunities. People will choose to open businesses. Some of those people ultimately may choose to retire and live here. I mean, settle here. But once you get through that phase and we get the building open, I think that's really where the excitement starts to me. Because now what we get is we get a very, in my opinion, some may disagree, a very quiet, large factory. And no, it doesn't employ a ton of people. It does employ maybe a couple hundred folks.
Okay.
You hope to grow that. But it becomes a magnet. I told you the old story, if you do development, years ago, McDonald's would spend $50,000 a site to plan for a McDonald's. And they'd put all this money in. They'd strategically locate a McDonald's based on wealth, drive time, et cetera. And Burger King would just wait and buy the land one block away.
Right.
Because they said McDonald's did their research. And Burger King was right. And that's how you see it all over the country.
Absolutely.
And so that's really, I think, what's going to happen here is that there are going to be companies that say, wait a second, XYZ company, whoever they are, we don't know the actual vendor yet, but who they spent millions on this site development. They know Shreveport can deliver X. They know that we can come there and be welcome, and other things will build. And that's where we will ultimately probably see the growth. You'll see the tax growth. And then home run on this one. Yes, the mayor and the council, but really a home run to Justin Dixon and all the people behind the scenes, because they've worked years to make this happen.
What does it do to, if I'm within the 500 feet zone, or maybe let's say 1,000 feet, and I own a home there and I'm trying to retire in that home, what does it do to the property value of those homes?
From what we've seen in other places, I'll start with this. The land value is going to go up. Now, land is not always home in the realtor world, but the land value around these facilities gets ridiculous. I think I told you over in the Richland area over in East Louisiana, there's now land selling for upwards of $100,000 an acre.
Whoa.
And so, and land does back up and have home value because homes sit on land.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if I'm a home person there, maybe in the immediate short run, today you might not be able to sell the house, okay, for what you think you can sell it for.
Sure.
Or that increased value, because no one knows what's going to happen. But what we also saw in other places is if there are people that wanted to sell houses today, there are going to be companies and people coming to work at that factory that will buy them tomorrow because they need a house for the next 4 years.
Sure.
They're happy to live a block down from where the construction site is going to be.
Right.
Long term, again, I've been to Manassas, Virginia, where they went and toured. There are very nice neighborhoods that exist right next to these facilities with proper sound barriers, with spacing, with green space. The only problem they had in Manassas, to be honest, if you Google it, the latest project in Manassas, Virginia, did run into some opposition because it got too close to the historic battlefield.
Ah,
Manassas.
Okay.
Called Bull Run by those in the south, Manassas by the north. And so that was why that one went down. That 1,600-acre 60th park they were doing got too close to battlefield. The other ones are all right there. And guess what's right next to them off the highway? Targets.
Ah.
Chick-fil-A's.
Okay.
Lots of retail has grown up in that area to support all the jobs.
Does it bring other data centers?
The answer can be yes. I think it brings other businesses. And the best analogy I like to use is a Walmart. We've seen Walmarts come in. And Walmart, to be honest, for the last 30 years, probably the biggest developer in the country of coming in and doing land deals. And a Walmart comes in and they build the Walmart, and then everybody wants to outparcel. Waffle House wants to sit out, and the McDonald's wants to sit on the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So they get these other people that want to be around a Walmart. And the same thing happens with data centers.
Why?
Because once you have a data center, there's a lot of customers that would like to be right next to the data center, like a Visa regional processing center, like an Amazon or AWS warehouse, or I'm not saying these people are coming. I'm using examples people might know, like a ChatGPT, you know, who will use the warehouse? When we brought Cyber Command in out, you know, in Bossier, they were companies that now want to set up next to Cyber Command. When we built General Motors, there were sub-bulk suppliers that wanted to set up next to General Motors to save in the ship time.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, the data center is a product. It's data. Some people may not like that, and I understand that. But the people that like data as their product, as their primary input, they might want to be across the street. They might want to build their own data center place right next to it. And we say data centers. The one in West Shreveport is a huge, massive data processing complex.
Mm-hmm.
Data centers can be smaller buildings. We already have two or three in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. When we come back, we've got the news straight ahead, but after the news, there's a Santa Claus scandal happening in Shreveport.
Scott's, in my neighborhood.
Scott's going to unravel what's going on with poor old Santa Claus.
In the Candy Cane Forest.
Oh, no. We got to find out about that when we get back.
He had a rough year last year.
101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Breaking news. Breaking news. There's a Santa Claus scandal breaking. Scott Hughes, your finger is on the pulse of the Santa Claus scandal.
I live in Candy Cane Forest, as you know, and we've shared with listeners before.
Mm-hmm. Piermont, right there, east of Pyrmont, Line Avenue.
South Highlands neighborhood, mm-hmm. Thrill Hill, Gilbert, that area.
There's a Santa Claus in that area. Describe people who are not familiar. Where is the big Santa Claus that everybody loves to go see?
Well, the Candy Cane Forest is Pyrmont. And mm-hmm. my neighbors have put all the lights up again. It's fabulous. You've not driven by yet.
People
should go see all of the red and white trees. It's wonderful. At the base of Thrill Hill, down where the Ockley Bridge is.
Mm-hmm.
And that green space right there next to the Ockley Bridge, one of our neighbors has taken a tradition of putting up inflatables, holiday inflatables. And last year we had Santa Claus show up.
Yes.
And if you remember last year, Santa Claus got stolen.
He got swiped by
Santa
the Grinch.
Claus, he got wiped. And I just remembered he wound up in Doyleen.
Doyleen.
Mm-hmm.
And nastiness,
so
Doyleen.
So there was video, just to remember, they found him, Santa Claus came back, and Santa Claus is back up this year.
Good, okay, good.
And Santa Claus has a tree now. The tree's bigger than Santa.
He's got a candy cane tree?
No, he has a Christmas tree.
Oh,
it's like a 30-foot inflatable Christmas tree.
Wow.
So the neighborhood, having had Santa stolen last year, did not back down. The neighborhood doubled down.
Okay.
We're putting up two inflatables. I say the neighborhood, there's one individual that does it, and we give mm-hmm. that person kudos. But there's others that help him. But if you go to the Ockley Bridge, there at the base of Thrill Hill, there is a 30-foot inflatable Santa. He may be bigger now. Who knows?
Wow.
And now there's a 30-plus-foot Christmas tree that inflates next to him.
But did something happen to him last
Apparently, last night, it went for a ride.
No!
The big cold winds to the North Pole blew, and Santa went for a ride. My sources tell me that maybe he got lifted, flew around to look at some boys and girls and wound up in the power lines.
Is he okay?
I'm told he's okay. He's going to make a comeback, but right now they're getting Santa down, and the tree might have taken some damage.
Oh, no.
And so the tree, I think Santa's elves are fixing the tree.
Okay.
But the good news is, for those that want to go look at lights and go to Gilbert and Thrill Hill and Candy Cane Lane, Santa will be back. I don't know if it's tonight.
Okay.
But I think by the weekend, probably Santa and the Christmas tree will be back.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. And nobody steal Santa, because we will find you. They have video cameras on all of that, so they will find you.
But we do. It's that time, Aaron. Go look at Christmas lights.
Yes.
Our community. My neighborhood does a good job, but there's lights all over. You like our neighbors. They're actually down a little bit more down Pyrmont, down mm-hmm. near Southfield. You love the house with the Ditto sign.
Yes, the Ditto sign's not there this year.
Are you calling them out?
Put the Ditto sign back up. I was very disappointed because they got the one house that's got everything on it. Then the neighbor across the street puts a sign up that says Ditto.
That's the corner of Pyrmont, Southfield, and Fern. And,
yes.
In one corner, every holiday they do that. I don't even know where their warehouse is. They got to have a warehouse.
They have to.
But they have all their Christmas stuff up this mm-hmm. year once again.
Beautiful.
And the people across the street always have one sign that says Ditto.
It's the best. It is absolutely the best. More on the data center when we come back. The big vote. We're going to have our take on the council meeting yesterday where they had 50-plus speakers and the council voted. Scott and I will talk about that when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back with my pal Scott Hughes in studio. I can't believe it's almost getting close to 9 o'clock. Christmas week is next week.
It is here. The Christmas is less than a week away.
Golly, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable how just this year just flew by. City Council yesterday voted unanimously, 7-0, to grant the special exception use permit for the data center for West Shreveport.
Overturning a tie MPC vote.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't mention it, but there was a ninth MPC member that had to leave the meeting.
Yes.
So that's how we got the tie.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to put that person on the spot, but they very likely would have voted at the MPC level had they been there.
Yes, absolutely. This is a big project for our community. It's a 2.8 million square foot data center for West Shreveport to be built in, I believe it's the 7300 block of Greenwood Road, if you're just getting on the train.
And that's a big facility.
And it's in an industrial, already zoned industrial complex.
Zoned I, mm-hmm. but I think they did have to ask for the exception for the 24 hours and maybe something to do with the use.
Right.
I think data centers may not be a direct use.
Exactly.
But in theory, it's actually a better use than many of the things that are zoned for an I.
Oh, absolutely. You could have a rock crushing operation.
Somebody said it's the highest and best use, and I do agree. If you have an I zoning, this may be the highest and best use.
It absolutely. I totally agree with you on that. But I'm going to be like you, Scott, and like others have said, I'm going to watch and make sure the things you have promised me will be happening, that I won't pay higher electric rates, that the city's water will not be impacted because of this place, that you know, the construction will be handled properly, et cetera. All the things that the noise won't be a factor. And I think the city council made that loud and clear, too, yesterday in watching the meeting. Did you hear that, too?
They did. I think accountability is going to be a huge level of this project going forward. And to be honest, I think we as a community, because let's step back a second. We as the community approve this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not everybody individually, and definitely not the citizens living in the shadow of this.
Right.
They made that clear. So I think we as the community owe it to those citizens that we voted this on to protect them with accountability.
Absolutely. The one question I have about this, and this came up during the meeting, a couple of people said, it's not a General Motors or an AT&T or an Amazon with 2,000 jobs. It's 150 jobs. Now, I think the jobs pay six figures. I think they're close to six figures, if not already will be.
They are technology jobs.
Right. Is 150 jobs worth what we have gone, you know what I mean? I'm kind of like, man, we jumped through a lot of hoops. We've done, but it's the complex is what we jumped through the hoops for, rather than the jobs specifically, right?
Well, two things I'll say about that. One, yes, okay, because this is the new factory. You know, in the old days, we'd say, oh, let's get a car factory, let's get a pulling weed eater, let's mm-hmm. get whatever in here, AT&T. This is the new factory. This is, you know, there are some people that don't want to accept this, but data is the product. They're producing data storage. So it is. But the bigger thing is you hope this is the first one. Now, I don't mean that we're going to have six more at 7 million gallons. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But I'm saying this is the new catalyst. And so and I want to give credit, because I think there was a person that spoke very early in the meeting yesterday, and he had an excellent point. And most of us know him and do this kind of work. It's Craig Lee. And Craig Lee is a longtime, you know, activist in this community. And I thought Craig had an excellent analogy. He said, we have to stop looking at this one puzzle piece and look at the whole puzzle. And when you look at the whole puzzle, this is one piece. SLB is one piece. It said 600 jobs and now they're at 1,200.
Right.
Amazon is one piece that it hit their numbers, by the way. And
they've added a second
affiliate. Curtis Jackson, 50 Cent. Is one piece. LSU Med Center is one piece. The university, the whole thing is one piece. The port is one piece. And by the way, for those that haven't been down near the port yet, the port's got like a 200-foot wall up around something. Somebody's building something down around the port. Maybe it's a drill site. We have construction going on in Southeast Shreveport.
Right.
You know, right there
off of
Highway 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these pieces together are what accounts for the jobs.
Okay.
And they all work with each other. And I think that we're seeing this investment. My perspective as the analyst, step back and quit saying that we need to go elephant hunting and bring in a 3,000 job factory. Those days are over.
Those don't exist anymore, do they?
They don't exist. I know we're trying to get them onshored again, but they can then be offshored again. We are better off, as I'll suggest, Craig Lee laid out, of having a puzzle with a lot of pieces.
Okay.
But we got to keep putting pieces in the puzzle, and I think this is a piece of the puzzle. But we owe it to those people for accountability.
I got a text from Tim Magner with the Chamber of Commerce on the I-1 use, who says data centers are permitted use in I-1. The special use permit was required because the vacant lots adjoining the site are zoned residential.
Correct. And again, I don't want to get it. He is obviously correct. Mm-hmm. Dr. Magner knows what he's doing. He's been a big part of helping make this happen.
You
the
bet.
Chamber, congratulations. I think my understanding on the technical side, if we're going to go inside baseball, is they could have backed this facility up like 100 feet and not even had to apply for anything.
Oh, wow. Really?
I mean, I've had to, again, I want to be careful speaking out of turn, but I think Dr. Magner's comments are correct. Had they just positioned it differently on the land, maybe they wouldn't even have to apply for the variance.
Wow.
But they're trying, I think, to set up a larger, better development of the entire land. And so it did get within so many feet of those residential houses. Mm-hmm. And then that triggered certain things to happen.
Okay. It's real interesting.
Which now has been approved. And according to the mayor, the mayor does not see a huge legal challenge.
No.
That always is, and I didn't mean to raise, I'm not trying to encourage that, but that's my next thing, having watched this for a long time, is will people now try to tie this up in court? you know, and you see that in other parts of the country. And that's why I asked the mayor that question. It's not encouraging him to do it. I personally think that we need to move forward and just deal with accountability and get it up and running.
Absolutely. We're going to talk football with Scott when we come back, because some big games this weekend. The playoffs are starting. The playoffs.
American football or
American football.
Oh, I always
want
to be soccer, and you always want to do that big skin thing.
Oh, hush. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back this morning, my friend Scott Hughes, for our final segment before we head into Christmas week. Holy cow.
Christmas week, football week,
yes.
Playoffs.
It's playoff time.
We're talking playoffs.
College football playoffs kicking off tonight. What games are the biggies for you?
Well, there's eight teams in the first round. Four got byes. One through four got byes. So we're not going to see Indiana, Ohio State, those teams.
Okay.
They got byes. But we have four games. The one tonight may be the best.
Mm-hmm.
The one tonight at 7 o'clock on ABC ESPN is Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Having to go to Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Who are you liking that one? What do you think the line is?
I think Oklahoma's probably the favorite in
they
the game. I would say they're about a 3.5-point favorite.
Vegas says 1.5.
1.5. Ooh.
So Oklahoma favored at home by 1.5. Normally you get 3 points for being at home. Not that
yeah.
we are not encouraging gambling. I want to be very clear. But we're just looking at this for competitiveness.
Okay.
So that is basically a pick'em game.
A toss-up, yeah.
Alabama at Oklahoma. And you had an interesting fact that maybe Fletcher, our sports director, shared.
Mm-hmm. Said that this if Oklahoma wins, it'll be the first time somebody's beaten Alabama twice in a season since, I think he said, going back to the 1800s or some crazy year like that.
So I hate to say it because I grew up a Nebraska Cornhusker fan, but I'm rooting for Oklahoma tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Kinda.
Then we get to Saturday, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Miami at Texas A&M.
That game's at 11 o'clock on ABC ESPN. Miami at Texas A&M. Who do you think's favorite? Who do you like?
A&M's got to be the favorite.
That is correct.
They're the home team. I'm going to say they're about a 7-point favorite.
A&M by 3.
Three, that's
the traditional
it.
3-point year at home.
The home spread.
So A&M's only getting 3 points.
Well, that's another pick 'em.
And that's the other great game. Miami Hurricanes, who that's the one that got in that people screamed at.
Right.
Looking at you, Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Against the Aggies.
Exactly.
And the Aggies are nervous. That's a 10-7 matchup.
Tulane at Ole Miss.
It's going to be easy to go to sleep tomorrow night.
Oh.
At 2:30 in the afternoon. They even know this. The game's on TNT and True TV.
Okay.
So it's not even on the big networks.
Oh,
Tulane
boy.
Going to Lane Kiffin's former school.
Yeah. Ole Miss is the favorite, obviously.
Ole Miss is the favorite.
12?
17.5.
Whoa.
There, Tulane.
Whoa.
Tulane's got an uphill battle.
Yeah.
But nobody knows because Ole Miss is in, are they going to rally or are they in disarray?
Right. Is it a mess up there in Oxford? I don't know. I'm not sure.
And then the nightcap, if you want to stay up, it does start at 6:30 our time.
Okay.
And it is going to be a day game out on the West Coast.
Mm.
But James Madison has to fly out to Oregon, Corvallis.
Okay, we know Oregon's the favorite against James Madison.
Oregon is the favorite. How big?
I'm going to say 15 points.
20.5.
Whoa.
So
okay, that's
enjoy
gonna be a butt
your
spanking.
Trip to the West Coast, James Madison. Buy the souvenirs, dance with the girl, eat the food, because you are going to get blown out of the game.
They got to fix this because we don't need James Madison. It's not one of the 12 top teams in the country. We all know that. Correct?
Correct. And in reality, James Madison shouldn't have been in. In reality, my daughter's school, Virginia, should have beat Duke
mm-hmm.
and been the ACC champion, and then Virginia would have been in.
Tulane shouldn't be in.
And so James Madison kind of backed in when Duke beat Virginia in the ACC championship
Well,
game.
It's a mess. It is a good football weekend.
Or it could have been Notre Dame. That's going to be the argument people say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They got to do something with those conference champions because they're not – Tulane and James Madison are not two of the top 12 teams in the country. We all know that. And we will see that tomorrow when they get their heinies spanked. Thank you for being here. You're going to be back with us on Monday and Tuesday, I believe, correct?
You have asked me to come back.
Oh, good. Well, I appreciate that. We will have lots to talk about next week. It is Christmas week. Get all your shopping done. Get it all done. You got to hurry up. Get it done. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel.